Blog Talk Radio.
5, 4, 3, 2, 1.
Welcome to the Dynamic Dojo Radio Show. It's 11 a.m. and it's our Sunday brunch show on a different day. Normally we have our Sunday brunch show every third Sunday, but everything got messed up as far as our scheduling due to the Masters Hall of Fame, so here we are. So welcome to the Sunday brunch show. Now, before we get started with our cool show today, because we have a fun show that we have in store today, we've got the Urban Legends of Martial Arts show. So we're going to talk a little bit about urban legends, about martial arts, and if you have your own, give us a call here at 347-677-0699. But before we get started, I'd like to bring on my co-host and brother in the martial arts, Sifu Robert Deal. Sifu Bob, how you doing today?
Hey. Well, officially summer is here. It is hot.
Oh,
no. You were here up until last Monday, and it was nice when you were here. It was in the 60s when it was overcast a little bit on Monday. Tuesday, 90 degrees.
Oh, my God.
It was 112 yesterday. It was 120 in Vegas, those poor bastards.
112? Wow, that's crazy. And over here in Seattle, we think 90 is hot. And that's just because we're not used to it. Us Seattleites, we're like maritime weather people. We are not used to that kind of heat. And, you know, I mean, like right now, it's okay. It's like it's getting into the upper 70s and the 80s and stuff like that. And, you know, in a couple hours, it's going to be like in the upper 80s. And it's going to be hot in here. In this room before we get off the air, and I'm going to be like, my God, get me out of here.
Well, now, okay. You know how our bodies are, they change as we get older, and you and I have discussed this. Well, yesterday on the way to my wife's work, my wife stopped by a garage sale and bought a coffee table. You know, you've been to my house. You know we needed one anyway.
Mm-hmm.
$10
mm-hmm.
coffee table, glass table, no, great, no problem.
Mm-hmm.
I was bending down to pick. I hadn't even got the glass. I was bending down to pick up the glass and heard my back snap.
Oh, no.
I heard and felt. I've been walking around like an old man for the past day and a half now.
Oh, man. That sucks.
Yeah, and of course, my kids give me a hard time about getting older and gray hair, balding, all this other crap. And I still look at him and go, it's all your fault. That's the abuse we've done to our bodies. I mean, you're a wushu instructor. You used to do all these aerobatics and all these aerials, and now what?
Yeah, that's basically it. Now what? Because it's like my knees are shot, my back is shot. I can't do that anymore. And if I did, according to my neurologist, I'd be in a wheelchair by now. So it's kind of like, let's do this.
Exactly.
Let's take this call real quick. We got someone calling from area code 408. 408, go ahead. You're on Dynamic Dojo.
Boy, hello, Sifu and Sifu. This is Charles calling from San Jose.
Hey hello,
Charles.
Sifu Charles. This is Sifu Charles Shepherd. He was an inductee in the 2013 Masters Hall of Fame, and it was his idea. Actually, to do the Urban Legends show. So, hey, how you doing, Charles?
pretty good. I'm surviving the heat. Not as bad as Sifu Deal down there, but, yeah, we're getting close to 100 here.
Oh, man, even in a little more northern California. I should call my sister and see what's up over there. Well, before you get to class, because I know your time is limited with us today, Sifu Charles, because you have to get to class. A little bit later. So why don't we just go ahead and try this? So for our listeners out there, our phone number here is 347-677-0699. We're going to change around our format a little bit today. We're going to do a few urban legends first, And then we will do Sifu, Bob, and I's health news and weird news and stuff like that when you have to leave us, Sifu Charles. And then we'll get into much more urban legends. Now, if anyone out there has any urban legends about martial arts that you want to talk about or you want to add, 347-677-0699. Now, before we get started, I just want to I don't even know if I want to call it a shout out because it's kind of sad. Early last morning, at least I learned it at about like midnight or something like that, that Grandmaster Jim Kelly had passed on. And for our listeners out there that aren't familiar with Jim Kelly, he's a martial artist and an actor, and also used to be a pro tennis player. And he has a lot of movie credits under his name, but he's best known, for his role as Williams in the Enter the Dragon movie with Bruce Lee. He was also a star of such films in the 70s, such as like Black Samurai or Black Belt Jones, that kind of thing. Incredible guy, and an actor that knew real martial arts. He wasn't an actor that played martial arts. He was a martial artist that happened to be a good actor also. So, you know, there's no news yet about how he had passed, but on behalf of the Dynamic Dojo radio show, our thoughts and prayers and well wishes and stuff like that go to the family and students and all that were touched by Grandmaster Jim Kelly. Now, in honor of Grandmaster Kelly, I uploaded my favorite line out of the whole movie, Enter the Dragon. And, you know, sometimes when people say stupid stuff, I want to say the exact same thing. I want to say stuff like this.
Mr. Han, suddenly I like to leave your island. It is not possible. Bullshit, Mr. Handman. Man, you come right out of a comic book.
Bullshit, Mr. Handman. I've always wanted to say that to somebody. Oh, my goodness. Grandmaster Kelly, you were a trailblazer, and peace be with you. That was sad when I heard about it. And thank you to Grandmaster Robert Parham for letting us know about that. He was an idol to many. People have said that, well, now he and Bruce Lee are up there sparring. So let's hope that's the case.
Yeah.
Oh, my goodness. All right. Well, let's move on to something a little less depressing. Okay. So urban legends. So first, Sifu Charles, what led you to come up with the cool idea of urban legends?
You know, it's part of our job. You know, when we talk to people, we interview people, it's just these questions
right.
come up. And you have to practice, you know, the non-eye roll, the, you know, the bullshit comment. You're like, oh, okay, time to educate this person.
Right.
So.
Very cool. Okay, so why don't we do this? Because I know we've all got a few urban legends. Sifu Charles, why don't we start with you? What is one urban legend that you get asked about a lot?
Actually, just the other day is the Tai Chi question. You know, people are like, Tai Chi's for old people, and I had a gentleman come in, mid-50s, and he's like, yeah, I want to learn Tai Chi, but I'm not sure if I'm old enough. Oh, my God. Okay, let me think.
Oh, my. Okay.
So, yeah, that's one of my favorites now. I get that probably about every third student that comes in and wants to learn Tai Chi. And, you know, from my perspective, is Tai Chi actually more for kids than the old folk? The old folk should be in great shape. We should be running around with battle axes, being berserkers at this point of our lives now.
There you go.
Decrepit. So, yeah, it's always backwards.
Yeah. Now, why for, this is a question to, like, both you guys. You know, why would you guys think that, I guess, misconception comes out about Tai Chi? Okay, marketing. cool. You see a lot of like Cymbalta type stuff on TV, you know, like there's this commercial that I think is still being played every now and again on late night TV. I think it's about Cymbalta, one of those senior supplements or something like that, right? And it has a bunch of older adults in, you know, red Tai Chi uniforms, and they're doing Tai Chi. And okay, great, senior supplement, vitamin supplement or medication or whatever, and Tai Chi, that's what old people do. So yeah, I agree about the marketing. What about you, Sifu Charles? What makes you think the stereotype is out there about Tai Chi?
Actually, I blame Yang Tai Chi. Oh, those are fighting words, I know. But, you know, reality, when that was created, it was taught to soldiers. And soldiers, I mean, they're already fighty-bitey, right? They don't need the strength and the speed. So it was taught to them to create awareness and gentleness so they can have that yin aspect of the martial arts, if you will.
Mm-hmm.
And then from there, it's just easy for people who are not as strong, not as fast, to easily get into a martial art, you know, as opposed to Chen Tai Chi, which, look out for that one.
Yeah.
So it's just a general intro to martial arts, and, you know, that was some 200 years ago when that came out, and it's just been promoted ever since then. But
yeah.
You know, I don't know about you guys, but...
Go ahead.
Yeah, like I said, I don't know about you guys, but when I do Yang Tai Chi, it's like my legs are shaking and sweating and pushing it for everything I have, so...
Yeah, that's how I feel, too, doing Yang style. And I was talking to a student, a beginner student in one of my Yang style classes a few days ago. And, you know, she's not old, but, you know, I would say she's like around our age, right? And she's like, wow, you know, am I supposed to feel like I just got out of a, you know, like a workout, like spinning or something like that? And I'm like, well, yeah, kind of, because, you know, you are moving slowly and you are working your muscles at a much different way than you would if you were just moving fast. You're using your muscles in a more sustained manner to hold your weight as opposed to, like, maybe jogging, right? Now, both are great exercises and stuff like that, Tai Chi and jogging. But, you know, as martial artists, Every martial artist out there that has done a horse stance, you know, you sit in that horse stance for more than a minute and your legs start to go, what are you doing? Because of the sustained effort, right? And to move that slowly in Tai Chi, you know, does take a lot of effort. And she's like, wow, I really wouldn't have known that. I thought this was for old people. And yeah. And, you know, I actually did not roll my eyes at that because she actually discovered that through experience. And she's addicted now. She's like, woo, you know what I mean? I was like, oh, my goodness. So, yeah, that is an urban legend. So you hear that, folks? Tai Chi, it's not just for old people anymore. That's just an urban legend based on marketing and the fact that the movements are slower. It does give the impression that it would be easier for older people. But a few months ago, we had a show about the marketing of Tai Chi, and one of the esteemed masters of Tai Chi that we had as guests said, start it now so you can be a berserker, I guess, for lack of a better term, that you can carry a battle axe when you're older. Do it now. Don't wait until you're old. It'll be too late. So, yeah. Well, what about you, Sifu Bob? What's an urban legend you've heard of that drives you insane?
The one that I used to, now I don't hear this anymore, but in the 80s and 90s, the biggest one I'd heard of, as a black belt, you have to register your hand and lose your weapon. What a bunch of crap that is.
No, you know, I don't know where that comes from. Do you know where that comes from? Because I don't.
I have no idea, but it's been around as long as I can remember.
You know, I mean, I guess it makes sense because, you know, you have to register your firearms, right? Because it's a, you know, because it's a firearm, which is, quote unquote, a deadly weapon, right? So, you know, I want to know where that came from. So if there's anyone listening that knows where that ridiculous urban legend came from, please call us because we want to know, or come onto the chat board. So if you're listening live on Blog Talk Radio, you actually have to be listening live, excuse me, from the Blog Talk Radio marquee page, not necessarily from the Facebook link. So, you know, if you're hitting the embedded link in Facebook, you're not able to see the chat board, but you have to actually go to the page on Blog Talk Radio. Below the marquee is a chat board, okay? Go onto that chat board and let us know, you know, about any of the origins, about any of the urban legends. So, because I want to know. I want to know where that stupid legend came from. You got to register your hands. So what does that mean? That we're all, like, card-carrying, licensed to black belts? How does that work?
Well, that's what they used to call them. Yes, card-carrying black belts.
Oh, that's ridiculous.
I've been in the arts almost 40 years, and I've never seen one.
I've never seen a card. What about you, Sifu Charles?
No, I have not. And like I say, if you guys ever find out the source, let me know. I'm going to punch somebody in the nose for that one. Oh,
yeah,
boy.
Right? Oh, my gosh. That's wild. Yeah, okay, so you have to, that's another one. You have to register your hands as deadly weapons, or register yourself as deadly weapons, and literally carry a license. Now, I just found something here real quick. I love the internet. Apparently, the theory is that there is a slight element of truth to this legend of registering your hands as deadly weapons, because technically, according to the law, if you get into a fight and completely mess up your opponent, especially above and beyond what is considered "quote unquote" self-defense in a court of law, you could find yourself being held accountable at a much higher level than usual because of your training, quote unquote. Because apparently you're supposed to be able to, you know which, you know, what use of force you're supposed to be using, and, you know, not go completely overboard and stuff like that. And also apparently authorities tend to buy into the associated legend that martial artists all have that exquisite control, and we should be able to pull our punches enough to minimize the damage that we do to someone. So, for example, in the case of Matter of the Welfare of DSF 416 Northwest 2nd 772, I don't know what this is, 1988, oh, Minnesota App 1988, the Minnesota Court of Appeals concluded that the defendant, who had, quote-unquote, substantial experience in karate, was aware enough of the potential of his blows to deliberately break the plaintiff's jaw. I guess they just assume, you know, that either A, all black belts or masters should have that exquisite control. I'm sorry. If someone's going to come at me with a baseball bat, I don't think I'm going to spend like a half second to determine whether or not I should pull a blow, because he only came at me with a baseball bat. It's not like he came at me with a gun, right? I mean, see how ridiculous that is?
Completely ridiculous. And if you see somebody reach in their waistband, I'm sorry.
Yeah.
Their throat's coming out.
Yeah, right? I don't care if they want to pull out a pocket watch. You reach in your waistband and you've got threatening body language, I'm going to mess up now, ask questions later. Okay, what's that saying? Better to be judged by 12 than carried by 6. Now, some people would say, well, that's a little bit overboard, isn't it? Well, yeah, it is, but until you have someone coming at you with a baseball bat or a 2x4 intent on taking your head off, it's kind of a moot point at that point. So, wow, pretty wild. Okay, I've got one, and this drives me insane. You should never wash your belt. That's an urban legend that I've heard a lot coming up in the martial arts. You should never wash your belt. Now, I was you guys have heard that one, right?
Oh, yeah.
I hear instructors tell their students that all the time.
Yeah, it's crazy. Yeah, it's crazy. Oh, before we get back on the you shouldn't wash your belt, one of our listeners, Mr. Carl Hinkson, writes on the chat board, he says he found on the internet, at one point, black belts in Japan had to be registered so no one could claim that they had a black belt when, in fact, they did not. And this law, I guess, could probably be the source of that legend. So basically, it sounds like that stipulation in Japan was so that no Joe Schmo off the street could say, "I'm a black belt," when they're not. technically, we should have something like that here in America, but. Too many people walking around saying they're a black belt when they're not. But speaking of black belts, you should not wash your belt. I heard that coming up in karate. It wasn't so much an issue when I was coming up in Kajikembo. But it cracks me up because I remember years and years ago, there was this 17-year-old or 16-year-old, I don't remember, that had no idea who I was. I came to do a seminar, and I wasn't in uniform, and he asked me if I was there for the seminar, and I went, yeah. I didn't tell him I was teaching it. And he's like, "So, you realize you're not supposed to wash your belt." Completely random. I'm like, "Oh, okay, why not?" "Well, because all of your knowledge and power will flow out of it if you wash your belt." And I'm like, "Really? Really?" So, let's weigh the choices. Wash my belt and not be stinky, or lose all my knowledge. I think I'll not be stinky.
Right.
Oh, gosh. Has anyone ever brought that up with you, Sifu Charles? Come up to you and said, "Am I supposed to wash my belt?"
Yeah, I've heard that off and on, and, of course, for the record, I'm a little concerned about washing mine. I'm afraid it's going to fall apart. It's getting dry, so it might go into a glass case somewhere.
Yeah, I was telling Sifu Bobby the other day that I still have one of my original belts from the early 80s that I did not wash, and there's a reason why I don't wear it anymore. It's like, oh my gosh, it's been wrapped up in plastic over the last 10 or so years or whatever, and I tried to put it on once and it's falling apart. And I'm like, that can't be healthy. I should just throw it in a wash, but like Sifu Charles, I'm afraid it'll fall apart. It's just disintegrate in the washing machine. Oh my gosh. All right, let's go back to Sifu Charles. What's another funny martial arts urban legend that you know about, Sifu Charles?
God, well, you've taken some of my best. One of the others, and this comes out of China, and it's probably glorified by movies now, but one of the urban levels is, what level of killer are you? Can you kill 100 people in a fight, 1,000 people in a fight, 2,000 people in a fight?
Uh-huh.
I've had that once or twice, and I'm like, well, I really don't know. As slow as I fight, 100 people is going to take me at least a month of fighting to get through, so I don't ever see that coming up.
That kind of looks like the final scene in that Jet Li movie, The One, right, where he's like standing
the
on
one.
The mountain.
Yeah.
Oh, my gosh. Yeah, that's crazy.
I understand the question. They're like trying to ask what level you are at, but
yeah.
You reach a level where, you could have a bad day and trip over your own shoes, and then other days you're just right on. So, just train with me long enough, you'll figure it out.
Yeah. Yeah. Oh, my gosh. Yeah. It's amazing how these urban legends about anything, I guess it doesn't have to be about martial arts, but because of the nature of martial arts, I think the subject of martial arts lends to the fantasy, I guess, that some of these martial arts urban legends are based off of. Sifu Bob, how about you? What's one that drives you absolutely nuts, too?
A black belt means you're a martial arts master.
Oh, my gosh. Oh, my gosh. That's right. And there's
a first
only one thing
stand
I got. Yeah.
Is a beginning student.
Right. Yes. Yep. It's the beginning of your training. And whenever I see people that, you know, that say, yeah, I just got my black belt. I'm now a master of martial arts. I just want to say.
You big dummy.
That's right. That's right. Now, I'm trying to remember where I saw why people think that. But for our listeners out there, we have several that are on the chat board now, and several that are listening live right now. If anyone knows or is able to search for this information, because whenever I do a search for information, my studio board gets really slow. You know, if you guys have any information about that, give us a call, 347-677-0699, or type into the chat board. Now, in a way, I can kind of see where that urban legend comes from. In a way, and this is just a theory, that, you know, it does take a while to get a black belt. But if anything, if there's anything that they've mastered, it's probably only basics. And I think that's where the misconception lies with a lot of non-martial artists. Oh, you're a black belt. You must be a master. No. Not at all. So,
however, Sifu, there are a number of martial arts that you have mastered everything within that art by, let's say, second dan. Everything after that is just keeping your knowledge and time in.
Mm-hmm.
Well, you might be able to test third, but your third dan test is identical to your second, and as long as you've maintained the information, you get your third dan rank.
Mm-hmm. Agreed. I don't remember what certain arts are out there. There are that actually has a curriculum that you can learn in its completeness. You know, within first or second dan. Like, for example, I can only speak about my own curriculum, and I'll ask about yours here in a second, Sifu Charles. Our curriculum, by the time you get to your apprentice black belt, you have learned all the forms and stuff that you would need for the curriculum, as well as all of the concepts, fighting concepts of the curriculum. So when you get your black belt, you know the curriculum, but we try to make it a point that the people know that, yeah, you know the curriculum, but now you have to learn to express it. You have to learn to put it all together, and that's going to take a while. You know, I just tell people that getting their black belt is like graduating high school. That's it. You know, they can choose to just go around with a high school diploma, but you know, they can choose to, like, go to college and graduate school too. So now, Sifu Charles, what are your thoughts on that? I mean, number one, have you had, you know, anyone assume or ask, you know, as a beginner, you know, number one, how long to black belt will I be a master when I get my black belt? Have you had anyone come up to you like that?
Yeah, I do get that question. That's when they get the eye roll.
the obvious eye roll, right?
You know, probably the fastest, maybe 2.5 years. And I mean, that's if you're training every day, you're there every day, and up to black belt, everything's set. You know, right now I've had people with me, you know, going on 7 years, and they're just closing in on black belt. So it really depends on the student. I'm the same way, that once you hit black belt, okay, now you're getting out of the car, now you're walking into the studio for real.
Yeah.
And we have our different levels. There are set forms that everybody has to learn, but once you're black belt, you start picking and choosing which system you want to train in. So we left it wide open because everybody's a different, and, you know, I don't want to create clones. I want to create people that, you know, if they're great at Tiger, they can master the Tiger system, and then they can, you know, eventually come back and start kicking my butt, so then I have to step up.
Mm-hmm.
That's exactly the entire system. So,
Exactly. That is, and that's and any good teacher will agree, you know, that we don't want clones. We want to teach people how to be, you know, better for themselves, and to someday whoop our butts, you know, because that, you know, that's the goal. If we can teach someone to whoop our butts, then they can pass it on, you know. However, you know, good teachers, I'm sure, will still step up their own game.
Yeah.
Although as old as I'm feeling lately, boy, I'm pretty sure anyone could whoop my butt right now. Oh, my gosh. So for our listeners that are just now tuning in, you're joining me, Rosita De Jesus, Sifu Robert Dale, and Sifu Charles Shepherd. We're talking about urban legends of the martial arts. So, you know, if you're just now seeing our post on Facebook about it, feel free to listen in. Join in the conversation on the Blog Talk Radio Marquee page. Get on the chat board and add your own urban legends. Or give us a call. Join the fun. It's more fun with more people. 347-677-0699. Now, Sifu Charles, I know you're going to have to, like, go here in a little bit. How much longer can you stay with us before you have to head over to class?
Yeah, actually, I got to start watering up and head on out. So.
Okay. All right. Well, wow. Thanks for joining us for this short time, and thank you so much for giving us a great idea about urban legends, because this is a hoot.
Yeah. It's nice to get together and talk about this stuff, because you're just day in, day out. You're like, oh, really? Am I the only one that gets this?
You know, and this is why, you know, we wanted to do this, is because I know there's got to be martial art teachers out there that are listening. And I know there are martial art teachers out there that have heard all sorts of these, you know, ridiculous urban legends about martial arts and roll their eyes and go, really? And this is a great way for us to unwind and let it all out.
Right.
Awesome. Cool. Well, thank you so much, Sifu Charles, for joining us, and have fun in your Tai Chi class.
All right. Well, thank you. Well, thank you, Sifu De Jesus and Sifu Deal. Keep up the great work. I love this. You guys are doing awesome.
Oh, thank you. We hope to have you on another show.
All right.
Well, have a great day and stay cool. Take care now. All right. And that was Sifu Charles Shepherd of Ascension Martial Arts in the San Jose, California area, who was the person that gave us the idea of doing this episode for our lunchtime Sunday brunch show. So pretty cool. Now, before we get into the rest of the urban legends, because we got lots more, let's go ahead and head over to our health news and Sifu Bob's weird news. What do you think, Bob?
You know, I like it. I think the show is going phenomenal. I do want to bring up one thing. I'm going back to the registering the hands.
Uh-huh.
Because of the technology now, do you realize that most martial artists, if we do get an altercation in the eyes of the court, we're screwed?
Yeah.
Because you Google either one of our names, oh, my God, we were inducted in the Hall of Fame, we're ambassadors to the Hall of Fame. Everything that points back to us being these tough guys, we're absolutely screwed.
Huh, now I'm curious. I'm going to do an ego search here. Okay, so I typed in my name, and the first thing I get is Facebook, YouTube, welcome to Rosita's channel, all about bullwhips, blowguns, martial arts, and slingshots. That's the first thing people see. Oh, Rosita De Jesus is on Twitter. Martial arts, blowgun, sword, and slingshots. Rosita De Jesus is on Google+. Let's play. Instructor, Tai Chi, Qigong, Wushu, Kajikembo. Martial arts instructor, Seattle Wushu. And then pictures, Masters Hall of Fame Awards, me in a gi. News story, West Seattle's Rosita De Jesus, now in Masters Hall of Fame. I think you're right. The first things that pop up is that. Now I'm going to type in your name.
Yeah, it doesn't say you live in Seattle or anything like that. It just says.
Yeah. Well, apparently the first thing that shows up is that apparently Robert Deal is a dean in the College of Professional Studies in blah, 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 blah.
That is not me.
That is not you. And then we've got Robert Deal on Facebook. That's weird. 14 people named Robert Deal. Robert Deal on YouTube. Here you are on Google Plus. But it's not your profile. It's a post. It just says, join Sifu and Sifu Rashid and Sifu Robert this Sunday at 6 p.m. Oh, here we go. Masters Hall of Fame. There's you with a stick and a knife. There are images. Masters Hall of Fame again. Warriors Magazine. Bits and Bobs. For some reason, I saw that as Bits and Boobs. I don't know why. and here's you nice. Teaching a martial arts seminar. Most of the pictures up here, if you're not that dean at that college, are of you with a sword and a stick and grabbing someone's gi or punching someone in the head. So it's it's obvious that you are a martial artist. So, yeah, I think that at least for you and me, I think we're screwed if a lawyer decided to, do a background check on us. So I guess that better mean we stay out of trouble. But
yeah.
That just means I'll never get out.
That's right.
Darn it. All right. Well, let's go ahead and go to our health news. Now, this is an interesting article. This is about how the size, weight, shape, and color of the cutlery you use and how it affects the taste of your food. Now, I had no idea that your cutlery could affect the taste of your food at all. So I figured, okay, I'm gonna use this for health news. Okay, and this comes from medicalnewstoday.com, and it was released this week. All right, the appearance of cutlery can affect one's perception of a food's taste. And this report comes from Biomed Central's open access journal called Flavor. Food tastes saltier when eaten from a knife, believe it or not, and denser and more expensive if eaten from a light plastic spoon. Go figure. Taste was also affected by the color of the cutlery. The crockery we use has been shown to alter our perceptions of food and drink. For example, beverages in cold-colored glasses were rated as more refreshing, and the weight and color of a plate can alter how dense, salty, or sweet the food tastes. In this study, researchers from the University of Oxford demonstrated that cutlery can also have an impact on how we experience food. Okay, that's weird, because especially the one about how light plastic spoons taste make your food taste lighter, makes your food taste more expensive and denser. You know, the last time I went to KFC, I never got that impression from my mashed potatoes. I don't remember it tasting any denser, but anyhow. Anyhow, the study found that when the weight of the cutlery confirms expectations, so, for example, a plastic spoon is light, yogurt seemed denser and more expensive. I still don't get it. color contrast is also an important factor. So, for example, white yogurt, when eaten from a white spoon, was rated sweeter, more liked, and more expensive than pink-colored yogurt. Huh. These effects were reversed for yogurt tasted from a black spoon, which suggests that color contrast mediates the effects of cutlery on flavor perception. Similarly, when offered cheese on a knife, spoon, fork, or toothpick, the cheese from a knife tasted saltiest. Huh. That's so weird. I don't remember the last time I ate from a knife. I think it was at a Renaissance fair. Now, Dr. Vanessa Harar and Professor Charles Spence, who performed this study, explains how we experience food is a multisensory experience involving taste, feel of food in our mouths, aroma, and the feasting of our eyes. Even before we put food into our mouths, our brains have made a judgment about it, which affects our overall experience. Okay, that makes sense. Now, Vanessa Harar continues, subtly changing eating implements and tableware can affect how pleasurable or filling food appears. So, when serving a dish, one should keep in mind that the color of the food appears different depending on the background on which it is presented, whether it's plate or cutlery. Therefore, it will taste different. This may also be used to help control eating patterns such as portion size or how much salt is added to your food. Alternatively, people may be able to make better food choices if their ingrained color associations are disrupted by less constant advertising and packaging. And that is the results of that study done about how the size, weight, shape, and color of cutlery affects the taste of your food. I'll go ahead and place that link and other related links to that story that are under that story on our Dynamic Dojo Facebook page, so go check it out. Wow, kind of weird, huh? I wonder if that explains why the presentation of certain foods makes a difference in especially like the high-end restaurants. Wouldn't you agree?
I do agree. You know, these, but as you're talking, a lot of this must have been blind taste tests.
Yeah, I would imagine so.
I've never felt any different.
You know, I haven't either. Although, you know, for me, it's weird. It's like, I guess like perception and emotion and stuff like that do go hand in hand. But like when I do eat from a knife, I don't necessarily notice that it tastes saltier or sweeter or denser or, you know, more umami tasting or anything like that because I attach an emotion to that experience. Right. You know, like the Ren Faire. I go to a Ren Faire banquet, eating from a knife, you know, the emotional content goes into it. I put myself in a different time, in a different mindset, and da-da-da-da-da. I'm not concerned about how salty it is. I just go, whoa, this meat is good. that's all I pay attention to. But, yeah, so I don't know. I mean, I thought it was interesting. And I haven't really experienced the whole yogurt tastes sweeter if eaten from a white plastic spoon. I just eat the yogurt because it tastes good. So I don't know. Maybe we're just
right.
Weird, you and I.
And with that emotional content thing, my first thought was, have you taken your meds today?
Yeah. Yeah. I did because I had a terrible headache earlier. But yes. I've taken my meds today, so yay. There's your rim shot, by the way. Oh, it's not coming up. What happened? My rim shot didn't play. Let me try that again. And it's dead. There it is. Oh, twice even. All right. Well, that was it for my health news. Let's move on to Bob.
Weird news.
All right. What do we got for weird news today?
Well, we got a woman in New Zealand. She was left speechless by making a simple mistake while sifting through her medicine cabinet.
Huh.
A 64-year-old woman made the unfortunate mistake of thinking a container of superglue was medicated cream.
Oh, my God.
What the hell?
It's in her mouth.
Oh, no.
I know. This is so weird. The Otago Daily Times reports, the patient who sought anonymity from the media was fumbling in the dark for a balm to apply to a cold sore late Thursday night, the Telegraph reported. The super glue and cream were kept in the same tray in her cupboard, the Independent reported. She couldn't get a whiff of the ointment because her sense of smell was muddled by a cold. The next thing she knew, she was in bed and her lips were sealed tightly. When she called the emergency services number, she couldn't even get a word in edgewise with the operator. No kidding, she couldn't speak. This must have been an interesting 911 call.
Oh, I know. Right. I shouldn't joke about it because that's got to suck. I'm sorry.
Oh, it's got to suck bad. It's like... just going back, you may remember this. It's like Mushmouth from Fat Albert Show.
Right, right. Oh, no.
Senior
Poor
Sergeant
lady.
Steve Aitken said the woman sounded gagged or possibly had a medical condition according to the New Zealand Herald.
Wait, she back up. He said what? He said she sounded gay? What's that supposed to mean?
Oh, gag.
Oh, gagged. Okay. I was going to go, whoa.
According to the New Zealand Herald, she could only grunt. The glue was removed with a paraffin oil at a hospital in Dunedin, the Independent said. Wow.
Wow. Wow. Oh, my gosh. That bites. That just bites. Well,
I
I'm glad that...
I know. It's only a man's dream where their woman, when their wife or girlfriend can't say a word. Like when you when we had Hanshi Dan Hecht on the show and your mic went out.
Yeah.
I thought I died and gone to heaven.
What the hell?
Okay.
Okay, now we're going to move on to weird laws. I have two states again because they don't have a lot of weird laws in North Carolina or North Dakota. So, in Charlotte, North Carolina, women must have their bodies covered by at least 16 yards of cloth at all times. Yeah. Who's going to get out there and measure that? In Asheville, it is illegal to sneeze on city streets.
What?
Well, that sucks.
How do you control that? Yeah.
Yeah, right?
It is illegal to take a deer, like the animal, swimming in water above its knees.
Oh, boy.
Now, the next one's from North Dakota. I've done this quite often. You're tired. You don't think about undressing. You just lay down and go to sleep. Well,
right.
It is illegal to lie down and fall asleep with your shoes on.
Unfair.
Oh, boy.
Now, the next one, it's so commonplace here in Los Angeles. If you go into a bar, you get snack food with your beer. Pretzel,
right.
Trail mix, whatever it is.
Right.
It is illegal to serve beer and pretzels at the same time in any bar, club, or restaurant.
Huh.
God, I love when you come in too soon.
I know, right? There's a joke about guys I can put in there, but anyway.
Ball, please. Wow.
I'm losing it. Yeah.
This is okay. Now we know that you have to put on the a disclaimer that says may contain adult content for this show.
Yeah. Oh gosh, I'm losing it. Too much coffee.
Now, you know, I almost stopped for coffee, and I'm going, you know what? It's 91 degrees. I'm not getting any coffee.
Yeah, I got my trademark mocha cookie crumble from Starbucks, and boop, it was gone. I was like, wow, I must be hot, because there's no brain freeze or anything like that. But
right.
Wow. What cracks me up more is the deer. You can't take a deer swimming in water above its knees.
That's very, considering their knees are so low, that's very shallow water.
I mean, that's about our knees. Well, yeah, about my knee height, I guess, for depending. Moose, on the other hand, their knees are a little higher. But
Their knees are like your eyeball level.
Yeah, they are. That's crazy how big those things are. Oh, man. Whew. That was funny. Now, wow, those states don't have more weird laws?
No. Last 2 weeks I've had to do two states because there's not a lot of weird laws in the states I'm coming up with.
Wow.
And like you and I discussed, when I ran out of states in like 2 or 3 months, I'm going to switch to European weird laws.
Right. That's good. That's going to be fun, too, because I've read just a few of the laws, like, for example, from Sweden. Those are funny.
Oh, yeah. Sweden, England has some funny ones. It's going to be great.
Yeah. It'll be awesome. Oh, my gosh. Was that it for the weird news already?
That was it.
Oh, my goodness. Well, that was Bob.
Weird news.
All righty. So for our listeners out there, our phone number is 347-677-0699. Come on now. Don't be shy. It's our lunchtime Sunday brunch show. Feel free to call in and join us on the fun. Now, someone did call, and they hung up. But here's the thing, folks. If you call, you'll notice that there is a prompt that says, please press 1 to talk to the show hosts. If you press 1, it'll actually put you in the queue to talk live with us. Otherwise, if you don't press 1, we'll see your number, but I won't pick up the line because I'm just going to assume that you're just listening to the show, because that's how some people listen to the show if they're not at a computer. So if you want to talk live, please press 1. So if you called and hung up because I didn't answer, that's why. So if you want to talk with us, please press 1. All right, let's do this real quick. Let's take a short break because it's coming close to the top of the hour. It's almost 12 noon Pacific time. Let's go ahead and take a quick one-minute break, and we're going to get back with some more urban legends right here on Dynamic Dojo Talk Radio. We'll be back after this.
Experience the history, beauty, culture, and tradition of the martial arts at the world's first Martial Arts History Museum. Located in the city of Burbank, California, visitors will enjoy learning how Asian history became part of American history. For more information, visit our website at mamuseum.com.
While cutting molding with a 12-inch dual compound miter saw, while holding a newborn baby in your arms, when face-to-face with a congregation of alligators, with the ball in your hands and the entire freaking season on the line...
There are a million places you'd never consider texting, so why would you do it while driving? NASCAR driver Casey Kane here, asking you to please stop the text, and together we can stop the wrecks.
Brought to you by the Ad Council and the National Highway Traffic Safety Administration. Get the message at stoptextstopwrecks.org.
Some statistics are surprising, some are unbelievable, and some are simply unacceptable. Right now, nearly 30% of U.S. students aren't finishing high school. Nearly 30%. And that's the average. In many places, it's even higher than that. And fixing it is a responsibility that we all share. This is President Obama, and I urge everyone, not just parents, but friends and neighbors and family members, to take responsibility for encouraging the high school students in your communities, to support them, challenge them, push them a little, and do whatever it takes to help them make it through. Because this is one statistic we simply can't afford to ignore.
You can do your part by going to boostup.org and sending an email, a text message, or even a wake-up call to a student at risk of dropping out. Go to boostup.org and provide the boost that's needed to make it to graduation. A message from the U.S. Army and the Ad Council.
And now, on with the show.
All right, and we are back. If you're just now tuning in, this is the Dynamic Dojo Talk Radio Show with Restita and Robert. It is our Urban Legends About Martial Arts show. And earlier, at the beginning of our show, we were talking to Sifu Charles Shepherd, who came up with this great idea for the show subject, and we discussed a few of those urban legends, such as, if you are a black belt, you are automatically a master of martial arts, and a few others. So for our listeners out there, if you've got a few urban legends about martial arts of your own that you've heard or seen on the internet, feel free to give us a call, 347-677-0699. Wow, the first part of our show was really fun with those urban legends, don't you think, Bob?
Oh, yeah, they were great with Charles' input and what we were going. Yeah, they were really fun.
Yeah, very cool. Now, let's go over a few more. I've got one. I think it's more of a, I don't know if it's more of a misconception as it is an urban legend, but I'm just going to call it both. So, excuse me, the misconception / urban legend about martial arts is that all martial arts are all ancient, like thousands and thousands and thousands of years old, all of them, thousands of years old. Now, a common perception is that martial arts all hail from eons ago. Get into a discussion with any civilian, quote unquote, and they'll regale you with tales about how their great uncle Egbert studied the ancient art of mummy foo. and they're serious about it. And they are serious about it. They believe it, right? Now, with that said, many martial arts do have very old origins. Now, I'm a firm believer in that if there's any culture in the world that has ever gone to war or has been involved in any type of warfare with another culture or, you know, even within their own country, that that culture or country has a martial art. And we all know that war between people and factions have been going on since time immemorial, right?
Right.
You know, even during like the, you know, biblical times and prehistoric times and stuff like that. But in as far as martial arts, quote unquote, as we know it today, while there are a few arts that can trace their lineages back thousands of years. So, for example, the art of Varmani, which is about 5,000 years, which is sort of similar to another Indian art called Vajramushti, which is, I guess, thought of by some as the touted art that Bodhidharma brought to China to teach the monks, the Vajramushti, kind of a yoga thing. Okay, so we're talking that, you know, this Varmani, 5,000 years, right? Kung Fu goes back about, if I remember correctly, about 3,000 years. I may be wrong about that, but maybe about 3,000 years. And Jiu-Jitsu, or Taisabaki, goes back about 1,000 years, as far as how we know it today. Of course, back then, it probably, you know, wasn't called Jiu-Jitsu or Kung Fu, right? Most arts that we know today, as far as like the karate styles and stuff like that, most of them are less than 100 years old. Like, for example, judo, as we know it today, was founded in around 1882 by Jigoro Kano. Aikido, as we know it today, with that name Aikido, founded in about 1935, and Taekwondo in 1955. So, you know, as far as the origins, I think as far as where the misconception comes from, I can see where it comes from because, you know, you've got like Kung Fu, 3,000 years old, Varmani, 5,000 years old, etc. I can see why people think that. But as far as the styles as we know them today, the harsh reality is that they're not all a bajillion years old. So there you go, folks. You know, and if anyone can add on to that or can correct me on that, feel free to call in 347-677-0699. All right, so that was one about that. Oh, the martial arts are all ancient. So what about you, Sifu Bob? Any other funny martial arts legends?
Well, you know, when Bruce Lee died, there were news stories and specials and how he died and
right.
There were all these conspiracy theories.
Right.
And he was, you know, he was sleeping in his mistress's apartment and... Mm-hmm. The one thing that really sticks out is Bruce Lee was assassinated by Shaolin monks for teaching their secrets.
Right.
Now, he was chastised for teaching the American public.
Mm-hmm.
Absolutely. It's not like the movie The Dragon where it was a death match because he was teaching Guai Lo. That's not how it went down. But this article says, wow, really? Yep, after Bruce Lee's death in 1973 from an allergic reaction to painkillers, the conspiracy floodgates opened wide. We were just talking about that, letting free a tsunami of theories about Bruce being killed by Shaolin monks because he dared to teach their secrets. Bruce was killed by ninjas. He died in a to-the-death match that was held on a movie studio ground. There's even a theory that he died from a death touch. Conspiracy theories abound where an icon dies at such a young age Bruce Lee's exceptional level of training and fitness led some to insist that foul play must have been a factor in his death. While these theories sell books and add an air of mystique to Bruce Lee's legend, the facts and rational thought simply don't support such notions.
Mm-hmm. Wow. Wasn't there also one out there that it was part of a curse? Right? You remember that story?
Right.
That there was a curse that some fortune teller put on something. I don't remember, but that there was a curse on the family, which is why Brandon is dead. Yeah, yeah.
Right. When he died, it was part of the Lee curse. And no, that was stupidity.
Yeah, yeah. And yeah, that was unfortunate. It, you know, it was a prop, but yeah, legends abound. It's kind of like, you know, the King Tut thing. You know, a lot of people thought that King Tut's curse killed Lord Carnarvon and you know Carter and all those guys that unearthed King Tut's tomb. I don't know. I mean, I don't know. Now, speaking about Dim Mak, though, I was going to tout this as an urban legend, but, you know, to tell you the truth, I don't know. I'm going to leave that. I'm going to put that out for the public to decide because, you know, Dim Mak or the Death Touch, as it's well known as, is the supposed art of striking points and energy meridians on someone's body that can cause immense injury and even death. Often hours after the strike is made. Now, this type of Dim Mak is made popular in the old style wuxia films or the martial art films, such as I can't even think of any other of any good examples of classical wuxia movies. But a lot of this comes from wuxia, and I'm sure you've seen it in like even in the corny B-rated kung fu movies, right, where people will be fighting and all of a sudden the thumbs and the fingers will move really fast, like five times, and then bloop, the other person will spit up blood and die a dramatic death, right?
Yes.
yeah, you know, and this knowledge of this this type of art has held a revered place in the world of martial arts, not only with the people that practice energy striking and stuff like that, but also within the realm of urban legend. Now, like I said, I don't know if I want to call it an urban legend, because when we start talking about, you know, striking points and energy meridians or whatever, you know, I've had acupuncture done on me and acupressure through, you know, acupressure massage and toi na, Chinese massage and stuff like that. And I must say it's very helpful. And I was always taught that, you know, if you use acupuncture needles and stuff like that, that if you go in far enough into an acupuncture point, it's helpful. If you strike those particular acupuncture points, it can be hurtful, right? Which is true.
Right.
Right.
Very
a lot of the points. Yeah, a lot of it, which is funny because the last time I broke my ankle, I saw my acupuncturist, and the first place he put a needle was in the chuchi point, which is right there in the crook of your elbow. Like if you bend your arm and you see the crease in your arm over by your bicep, it's the very end of that part of your elbow, you know, where we normally feel tennis elbow pain, right? He put a needle there and puts a low-level electrical current there. And I immediately felt the pain start to dissipate. I'm like, okay, that's cool, that kind of thing. But, you know, God forbid if someone like, you know, does a tiger claw type of a thing and really digs their finger in there, my arm goes numb, right? And I'm sure we've all experienced that kind of pressure point type of attack, right? Have
right.
I died from it? Well, I'm not dead, right? so, you know, I don't quite know if I can call it an urban legend, because now it's getting too layered at that point, because, you know, acupuncture, you know, for some people tends to work, you know, grabbing certain pressure points or whatever tends to hurt like hell. But will it kill you? That's the thing. So I'm sure I'm opening up a can of worms, right, Bob? Yeah, I am opening up a can of worms, but it's not so much because I'm being disrespectful, you know, because I do believe in, acupressure, acupuncture and stuff like that. Even, you know, thought about, you know, going to school to be a master of Chinese medicine. What I want to know, if there's anyone out there that practices it, is, you know, what kind of training does it involve? And do you learn it specifically to kill people or specifically or more so to have another tool in your toolbox for pain compliance control, you know, that kind of thing. Now, you're a stick fighter too, Bob, and I know you've been put in compressions, point hits with the puño or the tip of the stick and stuff, and it freaking hurts, doesn't it?
Oh yeah.
Training with Master Cheryl Johnson, you know, she will compress points on my arm that, you know, she knows will completely make, you know, the whole left side of my body go dead if she's, you know, compressing on the right arm and stuff like that. And no matter what I do to say, okay, I'm going to stay up, no, my legs come out from under me. Every time, no matter what, you know, and because of the whole like nervous system stuff and blah, 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 everything's connected and stuff. I don't know. I'm not gonna say it's an urban legend, and I don't want to open up that can of worms, but I'm pretty sure I did. So if anyone wants to talk to us about pressure point fighting, we'd love to have you on the show. Give us a call because we do want to know more about it. But so I'm just gonna leave it like that. Not quite an urban legend, but there is. I mean, you know, at least the way that it's portrayed in the movies. I hit you, you will die 6 hours later. You know, I don't know if it works like that. I don't know.
Yeah.
All right. So, back to you, Sifu Bob. What's an urban legend that that you think is funny or drives you insane?
Well, how many times have you seen a martial arts class or a self-defense class say things like, yeah, you palm strike someone in the nose, you're going to send their nose right up into their brain and kill them.
Oh, my gosh. Oh, my gosh, that's right. Okay, I'm gonna call out the listeners right now, okay? Right on the chat board, raise your hand, call in or whatever, if you've ever heard that striking to the nose in an upward trajectory will send the bones in the nose up into your brain and kill you. Come on, let's show up. Raise of hands here. Come on now. That's crazy.
That's nuts. Do you know how much power to dislodge somebody's nose? Because it's mostly cartilage anyway.
Yeah, it's all Yeah, it's mostly cartilage. You'd have to break the front of the skull to send a bone up in there.
Right. And our skulls are made to take impact.
Yeah. Yeah. It's, wow.
But that was, in the 80s, that was a real popular line.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
In self-defense classes.
Yeah, yeah.
And I don't know anybody with that kind of power.
No.
That can actually make that happen.
Yeah. Now, when we say that you can break a nose, you're breaking the cartilage. And it hurts. It makes your eyes tear up. It's not a fun thing. To experience, well, I can't say from experience because I've never broken my nose. Have I accidentally broken people's noses? Yeah. Accidentally?
Yeah.
Accidentally.
Everybody's listening. She does not do anything on accident.
Okay, so maybe a couple times. There were times. Okay, I'm lying about a couple times. But...
Well, it's funny every time, and nothing against him because he's an okay actress. Every time I see an Owen Wilson film, I look at the schnoz on that guy and go, wow, that looks like it's been broken about a half a dozen times.
Yeah, right? Right?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, and it's like, now, folks out there, you know, that have heard this, that don't do martial arts, it's easy to break a nose, but to have the kind of power to break off a piece of the front of your skull, to break off a piece that's big enough, to send it up that channel, up into your brain. Number one, that's a long, it is a considerable long ways. Number two, you'd have to break off a piece that's at least that long. And number three, you have to be hitting at a trajectory that's so spot on that that piece of bone does not turn or get lodged in the rest of your face on its way up in your brain. So, so in rare cases, I don't think you can kill someone, folks, by striking them in the nose. It's a great self-defense tool, though. We will say that, wouldn't we, Bob?
Yeah, absolutely. It's a great self-defense tool.
Yeah, strike to the nose. It instantly causes, the pain reaction.
The pain reaction. What if it's hit hard enough? Tearing the eyes.
Yeah, swallowing your own blood. I mean, it's like it does a lot of things to your nervous system. So, yeah, strike to the nose, strike to the eyes, you know.
Where did that come from?
What?
Strike to the nose, strike to the eyes.
Where did it come from?
Random.
Yeah, well, as far as like using it for self-defense. I was still on the self-defense realm. Although I have heard a few things about people being able to pull out people's eyeballs and stuff like that. I haven't seen any videos or anything like that that allude to plucking out someone's eyeball and stuff. I mean, I've heard of accidents where, you know, people's eyes will get partially dislodged from the eye socket. But as far as like reaching in with your fingers and pulling it out of its socket, I haven't seen anything like that. Have you?
No, but that does seem more pliable. It does seem, if you stick your finger in somebody's eye, curl it and pull,
you have a better chance of, you have a better chance of pulling out, you know, all that viscous stuff rather than, you know, sending bone up into someone's brain and stuff like that. So,
right.
You know,
but that sounds pretty disgusting. I'm in a puking.
I know, right? I just thought about that. If I saw a video of someone doing that, I think I'd lose it. But, you know, poking someone in the eye, I have no problem, you know, spearheading someone in the eye if my life's in danger. I just don't know about pulling it out. You know what I mean? I don't know about that. But I guess, you know, you do what you got to do. I don't know. All right. Now, I've got one, and this drives me crazy. And I think the only reason why, you know, a lot of these urban legends drive me crazy is when the uninitiated or the much less experienced or the newbie people that haven't researched it enough say these things to me. It's not that I'm mad at them or anything. I'm just saying, you know, research these things before you say it. That's what drives me crazy. Okay, so here's one of them. The hakama. The reason why the hakama is worn over a kimono was specifically to hide their foot movement. That's the legend. And that drives me crazy. It's kind of like, you know, and I think a lot of it comes from students that go into the art of Aikido. Now, in Aikido, you know, you've got several ways you can place your feet. You can toe in, you can toe out, you know, to the footwork. And depending on where, you know, whether or not you toe in or toe out will dictate which way you're going to turn for a particular waza or technique, right? Well, the hakama, according to, you know, some students, was to hide that so you didn't know what throw was going to be put on you. Well, in actuality, folks, during actual battle, wearers in battle in Japan, if they were wearing hakama, which a lot of times was worn as a way of using them like kind of like chaps. That's why they were split down the middle. Formal hakama actually had no split down the hill during the middle. But anyway, in battle, foot soldiers and even samurai would hike up their hakama and actually tuck the bottom hem of their hakama into their belts so that they wouldn't trip over their hakama. Aside from that, a lot of times the hakama was to samurai as, like, let's say, you know, slacks or jeans are to us. So it was just part of their wear, you know, unless you got really formal and you had, like, the big, long, dragging ones and stuff like that. So No, folks, you know, I don't think the origin of hakama was to hide your footwork. So, yeah, just that's not it. That just drives me nuts, especially like when a 16-year-old says it to me. Oh, man. Okay, what about you, Bob? Let's go back to you for another funky urban legend.
Swords.
Swords.
Swords. Once a sword is drawn, it must taste blood.
Oh, right. That one.
I must say this. Only in video games.
Yep. I agree. I'll have to agree with that. Only in video games. Oh, man.
No.
Yeah. It makes no sense because, like, I mean, how would the samurai or aikidoka or kendoka clean their swords if that's the case? You know, I've got a room full of live blades in my room, and just on one rack, I've got 6 live blades. Am I going to cut myself 6 freaking times just to clean those darn swords? Come on now. Come on. Oh, my God. You know, I heard a legend also about the kukri, the Gurkha kukri, that it has to taste blood if it's unsheathed. And I'm like, really? Because, you know, I was always under the impression that the Gurkha knife, the kukri, was a utilitarian tool. It was a utility tool.
That's right.
You know, they use it to chop stuff for wood. If they happen to use it to kill someone, great. But I don't think it was primarily a Gurkha fighting-only weapon. It was a tool that was used as a sidearm. And if you happened to get cut by one, it was going to be really hard to do anything about it. Because, and listeners, if you've never seen a kukri, look it up. Kukri is one of the spellings. Look it up. It's a dense, curved blade, and in bigger sizes, a lot of times in like Indonesia or even Malaysia, they use the bigger sizes to kill offerings, to kill animals for offerings. It will lop a small animal's head clean off its shoulders. It's that formidable. But will it have to taste blood every time you draw it? No. That's a crazy misinterpretation of like warrior attitude, that kind of thing. So I have to laugh about that, though.
I know.
I mean, if that were the case, I'd be one scarred up gal if I had to clean all my swords and cut myself for it to taste blood. Oh my God. Or kill someone. It's like, okay, you know, at 3 o'clock today, I'm going to go clean my swords. I got to find 6 people just for that rack so I can clean my sword. I got to kill 6 people.
Oh, my God.
Jesus. Oh, man, you know, you can tell I'm irritated by a particular anything when I say the word, when I, you know, use Christ's name like that. I'm sorry, folks. I'm sorry. So, yeah, it's I this is going to have to be tagged as child inappropriate. So sorry, folks out there. You know, didn't mean to use the name in vain, but yeah, it's kind of what happens when I get disgusted by
certain good host, bad host. Because remember, everything that has been said that deems this show inappropriate for child, they've all been said by you.
Yeah, it has. I haven't dropped the F-bomb yet. So.
Yes, you did. You did a couple
weeks ago.
Oh, I did.
Oh, my gosh. Oh, you're right. That was it was a couple episodes ago. I'm sorry, folks, about that one, too. I've dropped the F-word.
And my friends, they had a bet going that I was going to be the first one to drop the F-bomb.
Yep, I was. And, yeah, I was. But you know what, folks? We're human. And that goes against the urban legend that all black belt master martial artists are Zen spouting, vegetable only eating people.
That's right. Well, you know, I mentioned earlier that my back went out yesterday.
Uh huh.
first thing I said to my wife, because somehow, because I had to go pick up that table that she bought, is it my back going out is her fault. I saw her at work, and I said, be prepared to buy me a lot of alcohol tonight.
Yeah, and non-alcoholic. And that kind of puts us into the next legend, which is what I just said. All master martial artists have to be, one, vegetarian, two, Zen-like or Buddhist or Taoist, you know, having to subscribe to those religions, or three, very, very patient, okay? Personally, I think that legend comes from the old Kung Fu TV series, where Kwai Chang Kane exhibited all of those traits. Very patient, spouting wisdom from Master Po, right? Vegetarian.
Right,
and
we all
fine.
Know in real life he was a big old alcoholic.
Right, in real life, right? Now,
right.
I have met a few real Shaolin monks that are like that. They are Buddhist, devout Buddhists, practicing Buddhists, great martial artists, very, very patient, and vegetarian, okay? But that's them. That's their, you know, that's how they were trained. Not all martial artists are like that because we're human folks. I like eating meat. I like eating meat. I like even cussing every now and again. I do lose my temper every now and again. Am I patient? Yes, a lot more now than I was when I was in my 20s, and I do credit martial arts for that. But, you know, being human, you know, we all, you know, we're all human. And you can't really fault anyone for that. But that really gets my goat. I told someone, and I kid you not, I told someone at a wedding party that I did Tai Chi. And the first thing they said was, oh, you must be very patient. And, you know, how long were you a vegetarian? What? What?
Oh, no, I'm laughing about them saying you must be patient.
I know, right?
Because I know you.
Yeah. You know, what? I'm still confused about that. Now, my students know that, you know, I can be very patient when teaching them, because I know where I'd like to think that I know where I came from, and I know that it's hard to learn a physical art. You know, it is. It doesn't come naturally. You know, a lot of people will say, oh, martial arts is natural. Yeah, once you master it, then you're able to apply it to natural movement. But it is like having two thumbs and two right feet, or two left thumbs and two right feet when you're learning, right? We all know that.
How many times, when you were learning, you could barely walk across the floor without tripping over your own 2 feet.
Right. And when I was learning Tai Chi, Master Hong thought I was a hopeless case, completely hopeless, you know, because 20 years of prior martial arts made it hard for me. I couldn't get rid of habits. And she literally had to, like, put me in a corner and beat me with a wet noodle because I wasn't getting it. And it was tough, and I know where that comes from. You know where that, you know, how it feels. I'm sure all of the masters that are listening right now, we know how it feels. But I don't understand where the whole you have to be patient about everything comes from. You know, if someone cuts me off in traffic, all right, okay, whatever. Now, if someone's going to be a jerk about it, then I'm going to lose my patience. You know, or if someone, you know, just, I don't know, says something completely asinine, I'm going to start losing my patience, right? And, you know, you and I have
right.
done that, you know. You and I have had long phone conversations about that. And it's like, okay.
Oh, yeah.
You know, and I know a lot of martial arts masters out there will nod their head and go, oh, yeah, been there too. Doesn't mean that we're less than. It just means that we're human. But that's all part of martial arts mastery. So anyway, there's that motivational clip for the newbies out there to martial arts. Be human. It's okay. You don't have to be a Buddhist. You don't have to be religious. I had a Tai Chi student quit because they thought I was going to subscribe them to Taoism. No joke.
Oh, wow.
No joke. Yeah, no joke. It wasn't even a week. It was 3 lessons. And I talked about the Taoist concepts. And I would say, you know, the Taoist concept of yin and yang is a da-da-da-da-da. I never said, I will require that you become a Taoist or a Buddhist to practice my art. Never said that. They quit. And I was like, wow, okay. Don't let the door hit you on the way out. Bye-bye.
Right.
Oh, okay. All right. Sifu Bob, back to you. Urban legend
okay.
That drives you insane.
Bowing. When
bowing
to someone, you must keep looking them. Now, it's really weird. Reading this, it wasn't very well written. We did a cut and paste, and there's words missing, words put together.
Yeah,
going,
I just kind of went,
really?
Whatever. Yeah.
And so when bowing, you must keep looking someone in the eyes in case they attack you.
Mm-hmm.
This is more so an American perception. If you don't trust this person, then don't bow to them. In Japan, the bow is a sign of respect, and many times you'll see Japanese bow not look each other in the eye, rather than using peripheral vision. The lower you bow, the greater the respect, especially towards a senior, shows trust. The Karate Kid proliferated that new tradition of the tournament scenes, and all involve competitors bowing by looking up and with Cobra Kai slapping their legs as they brought their feet together. Gee, real bowing, especially in Japan, involved no thigh slapping.
Right. You know, I was told that once, but it wasn't by anyone in my karate style. When we bowed, even during kumite practice, we always looked at the floor. It showed respect. And, you know, and we figured if you want to watch your opponent, you're going to use your peripheral vision anyway. Even in Iaido, when I was learning Iaido, before every kata, we had to do, you know, the seizanire, the kneeling bow. And you never looked up. There are forms in the style of Iaido that I study, where you bow halfway and you do the form as if you're reacting to someone who's pretending to bow and they try to attack you. But you never raise your eyes up regardless until you start your kata, right?
Right.
But nowadays, it drives me nuts at tournaments when people bow before a kata and they do like this really wild, like, dynamic bow where their hands will fly up into the air and then slap the sides of their thighs, like, really, really loud. And they'll bow, like, really fast and really sharp and keep their eyes up looking at the judges. Drive me insane.
Me too.
Inside, I kind of cringe a little bit when I'm seeing that as a tournament judge, you know. I prefer to see if someone's going to do a Japanese kata or even an extreme martial arts kata. I don't prefer to hear the screaming. Okay, now, like you and I and many other karate practitioners out there will see, you know, when you go to a tournament, they'll announce their kata very strongly. You know, like,
right.
You know, Kuzangudai, you know, like that, right? It sounds very strong,
right.
But they're not screaming it. I mean, at tournaments, I'll hear stuff like, and I'm going to take the mic away from my face, but, good morning, judges, my name is blah, 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 and I hail from the Cobra Kai School of Karate, and today I'm going to perform, rah, 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 right? And they're screaming, and the little veins in their forehead are popping out, and they're spitting, you know? And then they bow, slap themselves once, twice, three times even, when they bow, and they go, ah, when they bow. And it's all in an attempt to show their power. I look at it as an attempt to sound absolutely nuts. I'm like, really? You are standing 3 feet away from us as judges. Why do you gotta scream like that?
I know. The people on the upper deck of the auditorium or gymnasium hear them.
Oh, my gosh. But now, where would we figure that urban legend of having to look up when you bow comes from? I mean, I really don't know, other than you want to make sure you keep up with that. And, you know, is it primarily an American perception that, as you read? I think so.
You know, I would imagine it is.
Yeah, I would imagine it is. Because, you know, I was talking to a friend of mine about this, about American perception of martial arts. Not in terms of Americans that practice martial arts, but like beginners Americans of perception of certain traditions of martial arts. And I told my friend that a lot of times I thought that, you know, is it sometimes that we as Americans want to put more of a, how shall we say, legendary, exotic feel to Asian traditions to make their study of Asian culture, or in this case, martial art, more substantial? You know, that's what I'm wondering. You know, do we make up this crap?
Maybe a little more dramatic.
Yeah, a little more dramatic. And, you know, let's face it, it makes for better stories at the local bar. You know, right?
Right, you know, right.
You have to bow by looking people in the eye so they don't attack you. Oh, man. Real bowing in Japanese aspect. Now, how were you taught to bow, Sifu?
It depends on what
Japanese. Yeah, well, let's say Japanese style.
Japanese style, feet together, arms at the side, bow, and looking forward, like we said.
Mm-hmm. I was taught the same way.
Now, when I was at Don Baird's, until I herniated my disc in my back, they do bow deep,
yeah,
looking at the floor.
Yeah, yeah.
But now,
yeah,
studying Jeet Kune Do is completely a different bow, more of a kung fu bow with a little twist to it. Mark Stewart came up with his own bow because he has all these different arts. So he did a JKD bow, and then he with a Thai bow, and then with a Savate bow, all in one.
Mm-hmm. Yep. I was taught the same way initially when I was doing karate. You know, you bow, keep your head in line with the rest of your back. Don't, like, nod
right.
it right. forward, right?
Uh-huh.
And bend
mm-hmm.
from the waist. And then later I was actually taught from a Japanese person the proper way to bow, in that it's not so much that you're bringing your shoulders forward and down, but rather bringing your hips back. So that way your lower body and upper back didn't move, right? And at
right.
first
and
I thought to myself,
uh-huh.
oh, go ahead.
Well,
no,
you have to remember that the bowing is not a martial arts thing.
Yeah.
One of my daughter's friends is a little Korean girl, very nice girl, doesn't study martial arts. She bows to her parents, she bows to her parents' friends that are Asian. It's in no way, shape, or form a martial arts indicative formality.
Yeah, yeah. And a lot of times, you know, especially kids, when they get into it, they think that only karate people bow. And until they learn that it's a cultural aspect, it becomes that I guess that urban legend that, you know, and since it's karate, right, you better keep your eyes up, you know, that kind of thing, you know, which is fine. But if that's the case, then in Japan, you'd be keeping your eyes up when bowing to a senior, and that's not going to get you a job. in Japan. If you bow to the boss that way.
Disrespect?
It is. It is. You're supposed to bow a little bit lower and a little bit longer than the senior. It even goes down to seating. If you sit the way you sit at a table, if you're doing a business meeting, your seating is dependent on your rank and your place within that company. And when I went to Japan, there was a lot of practice in just kind of feeling who's who, and to be safe, to bow a little bit longer and a little bit lower than someone else. And it's different with women. Women bow differently than men do. A lot to learn. But it's all cultural. It's not just karate, type of thing. And
right.
I just think it's funny.
One thing that threw my kids off, we went to a Chinese restaurant a few years ago up by my house. And they set the soup and they set everything else down. My son goes to grab it. He actually, no kidding, got his hand sort of bumped by the server.
Uh-huh.
And she put a finger at him and it goes, "Papa gets served first."
Mm-hmm. That's right.
I was like, that was so cool.
Yeah,
clap a little
that's right.
Next time, darn it.
I've never been to a Chinese restaurant that was like that. Whenever there was a banquet, I went to one banquet that had press and stuff like that when my teacher promoted us to our positions in Wushu and in the Wushu and Tai Chi community. It was a big wing bang. Chinese news was there and everything, right? And on all the tables, I noticed that all the waiters automatically knew the order that the service would be done. And it wasn't like they just put down the dishes and you were good to go. This particular banquet, the servers, there was like a crew of servers for each table, which was incredible because there was like at least, 50 tables in this banquet room. So there was a lot of people just serving for this banquet. And the crew for each table would serve everyone in the order of position, rank or social status or height in the community, so to speak, on that table. So on my table, it was Master Hong that got served first. Then my classmate who was in the martial arts longer than I was, then me, and then everyone else that were students in accordance to rank. And I'm like, how do they know this? And
I was going to ask you, how did they know Master Hong was your instructor?
Well, Master Hong was the one that was responsible for this banquet. The banquet was to do a demonstration. It was also a fundraiser for a local charity, and it was to introduce us to the community in a public forum, right? And that's why all the news was there and stuff like that for the Chinese news, the Asian news. To introduce us to the community, to the rest of the martial art community, because there are three other traditional kung fu schools within a 4-block radius in Chinatown where my Sifu's Wushu Tai Chi school is. And we all knew each other anyway, but it was a matter of the formality of introducing us to them.
Ah.
To let us know that we were teachers and that we pay our homage to them and blah, 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 blah. Please accept us as part of the community. So it was huge. And they knew that Master Hong was already the teacher, my teacher. They knew that me and my classmate were being the ones introduced, right? But how they knew everyone else at our table, their order of ranking, I have no idea. I don't know if Master Hong talked to them. I have no idea if they just observed to see who was pouring tea for whom, because that is a big thing too. The lowest rank pours tea to everyone else in accordance of rank. So if the serving crew was paying attention, that's probably how they figured it out. But back then, I was like, how the hell do they know?
I know. It was funny in 2009. That was my first year as an ambassador to the Masters Hall of Fame. I inducted Don Baird, and Chris Kadamian, which we've had at least Chris on our show. We'll have Don eventually.
Mm-hmm.
One of Don's students was sitting at my right. I could not pour myself a cup of coffee all night.
Mm-hmm.
And this guy was a fifth dan.
Yeah, isn't that...
Everybody else that was lower than him did not serve anybody else. They should have been the ones jumping up and serving everybody.
They should have. And I think what he did was trying to hint, this is what you should be doing. This is what you should be doing.
That's exactly what he was doing.
Yeah. And, I've known Master Cheryl, who outranks me by a bajillion ranks.
Right.
You know, in Doce Pares, when we sit down, you know, I, out of respect, always give her the highest place at the table. And then we'll play the, oh, no, you go. Oh, no, you go. Oh, you take it today. You take it today. Whatever, right? But she will always get the highest place in my book. But she will always pour tea. And I'll look at her like, what are you doing? Then she'll look at me like, I'm hinting. You know? And it's not so much that we want the students to, quote, unquote, know their place. You know, that kind of thing. We want them to know the tradition. That's all. We want them to know the Chinese, you know, and Japanese cultural tradition, because I still do it when I go to family reunions. You know, I still have to know, you know, where my place is. So that way, when I pour tea, depending on where I'm sitting at the family reunion, because my brother-in-law is Chinese, that I do it right, because I don't want to look stupid, you know. And that's just how it goes. It's just, you know, in observance of the tradition. And she'll pour for me. And I'll pour for students. And finally, some student will finally get, Sifu, no, let me pour for you. And that will in turn hint to the white belt of the group or whatever, I will pour. And it's just to pay attention to the tradition, not look at me, I'm so much higher. But a lot of people tend to misinterpret that. So, and I guess that's another urban legend, is that the way you pour tea is to show your rank. And that's it. That's not it at all. So I want to make sure everyone knows about that.
Sifu, that is a great segue.
Mm-hmm.
Because in a few weeks, and you and I have discussed this, probably in 3 or so weeks, we want to do a show on martial arts protocol.
Yes, yes. No, I am looking forward to that.
I'm sorry, you corrected yourself. We don't want them to know their place. Well, yes, we do.
Mm-hmm.
You're Sifu. You should be put on a pedestal. You should be treated with respect. You should get your tea served. All these little nuances that in a lot of aspects, a lot of instructors aren't being shown the respect that they should be, that they deserve. They paid their dues.
Mm-hmm.
And I think, I hate to say it, and I'm going to open up another can of worms, this is an Americanized tradition where the instructors are not showing the respect anymore over here. Like, of course, in China and Japan, sometimes it's hard to tell who the students are, who the teachers are. But back then, back there, if you don't show the respect, you get cracked.
Right.
Or you're in horse stands for an hour and a half.
Exactly. And, you know, if anything, I want that particular show, and I hope we get a lot of listeners for that, because if there's anything, I want a lot of the listeners, especially students, especially the new students out there, to realize is that it's not so much, you know, for me, it's not so much put me on a pedestal. It's respect my experience. That's it.
Right.
You know, I've gotten cracked in the head. I've broken too many ankles. Well, as if I got more than two. But
yeah.
I've broken too many bones. Too many bloody lips, you know, too many, you know, canes and crutches and spitting up blood and, you know, stuff like that to not have a student listen to me. So, you know, if some newbie calls me by my first name, pats me on the back and says, yeah, well, you know, I think that technique just doesn't fucking work because I didn't see it in the UFC. And there I go saying the F word again.
Yeah.
And
didn't come out of character. That was good.
Yeah, right. But I have heard it that way, and that's why I quoted it. I just kind of want to go, really? You know, now some martial arts instructors will say, do you know who you're talking to? Well, at that point in time, that's ego involved. What me and Bob want to get across, listeners, is that it's not about the ego. It's about the rules that that particular martial art was made out of, the proper protocol that these traditions come from, and that some of us as Americans forget that and don't know of these traditions and don't observe it. That's what we want to address. Why we bow when we enter the dojo, why you say thank you to a upper rank when they help you, you know, stuff like that, proper protocol, because I'm seeing it more and more not being observed even in traditional dojos, and it's kind of disheartening.
It really is, and you have to think, it's a commercial enterprise, yes. You're there to make money. You can't really instill that a whole lot in, like, your younger students.
Yeah,
I'm talking 4- and 5-year-olds, because they'll end up going to cry to mommy and daddy.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and they're going to end up quitting. You have to keep them around. And there is a fine line where you draw the hardcore traditional protocol and where you back off a little bit.
Yeah, exactly. And I really am looking forward to talking all about that, because it does differ a little bit, teaching proper protocol between kids and adults. And it, because I was going to say something about it, but it'd be going off of our subject. So we'll just save all that for that particular show. So I hope our listeners will listen in on that, about the origins of some of these traditions and proper protocol, where these come from. You know, dojos, we'll call it dojo-kun. You know, kung fu, we call it wuda. You know, other martial arts might call it something else, but each martial art has its own protocol, and we want to talk about why. Yeah, so that'll be cool. All right, let's do a couple more urban legends. We've only got about 13 minutes left. Here's a funny one. All of today's kung fu styles are actually run by the triads.
Oh, yeah. Oh, my gosh.
So the legend is, if you don't know who the triads are, it's considered like a, well, nowadays it's considered like, a gang. It's kind of like, nowadays it's considered like the Yakuza of China. So that's an urban legend. I don't know where that comes from. I think it comes from, how many members of the triads do know martial arts. You know, and there are movies out there where the triads are fighting using a certain, you know, secret kung fu technique or something like that, right? But I don't know, you know, if all of the kung fu styles are run by the triads.
Right, right. And a lot of the popular movies had triads in them to add a mystique to the movie, like even like Rush Hour 3 had
triads
in it. A lot of these movies have, I forget which one it was a Michael Douglas movie.
Your headset went out, Bob. I can't hear you anymore. Bob, I lost you. I lost your mic, Bob. I can't hear you. Get your Bluetooth back on. There you go.
Like I was watching that 70s show the other day, and some of the inaccuracies are really funny because I grew up in that time, and then somebody picks up and dials telephone. He's using a push button phone.
Oh.
It didn't come out until like the 80s.
Yeah. Now, did you change your headset? Because now you're sounding really far away. Hello?
I lost my Bluetooth.
Yeah, you did. I was like, you were gone for about a minute. Yeah, triads. That's funny. Okay, here's another one. To get past sixth dan in Aikido, you have to be Japanese. Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
Not over here.
Yeah.
Or the claims that some instructors may have. An American guy claims that he reached 10th dan and was blessed by the Korean government in Taekwondo.
Mm-hmm.
That doesn't happen.
Right.
I'm sorry. I don't care who you are. That doesn't happen. The Korean government is not going to bless a typical American to be a 10th dan in their system.
Right, right. Go
and there's another
it, right?
can of worms. I just opened another can of worms.
You know, and that's what we're known for. You know, and it's...
Yes.
That's what we're known for. And it's like, you know what? It's because, you know, we want to bring martial arts into a real world aspect. I mean, you know, if your rule in a martial art is don't promote an American, then it's the rule. You know, please tell us why. You know, please, you know, because we're curious. We want to get the information out there. No judgment, but that's why we open up these can of worms. That's what we're known for.
Now, when they still had videos, there was a video place in Wilmington, California that rented nothing but martial arts videotapes.
Oh,
this
okay.
guy, the proprietor of this company was a Pakwa master.
Mm-hmm.
On his father's deathbed, he promised never to teach Americans Pakwa.
Oh. Huh.
You know, very traditional, do not teach around eye.
Oh, man.
You know, and when I was studying and teaching in Chinatown in L.A., we lost some students. Most of our students were either American or Hispanic.
Mm-hmm.
And very, very few actually Chinese Americans.
Mm-hmm. Wow. You know, and I'll have to like chime in on that about, you know, national pride, I guess. There was an instance maybe about 15 years ago. I was still teaching for my teacher, Master Yi Zhao Hong. I was teaching Nantan, which is the Southern fist boxing type of wushu. And it was its own class, and I was teaching it. She gave me that class. You know, specifically because number one, she didn't have the time for the class. And number two, she figured that since I was like a 3-time national champion with that routine, that I should teach it. Right. Because there were people that wanted to compete with it. I'm like, okay, I'll teach it. Well, some parents pulled their Chinese kids. So Chinese parents pulled their kids out because of two reasons. Number one, Master Hong wasn't teaching. And number two, I was not Chinese. And Master Hong called me one day really disturbed and said, two people pulled their kids out of your class because I would not teach them and because, you know, you are not Chinese. They thought I was, you know, picking second class people to teach their kids, you know, like their kids deserve better than you. And she was almost to the point of tears because she had never had one of her students insulted like that, nor was she insulted like that. You know, she was in tears. What do I do? I don't want to teach anyone like that. And I'm like, well, it's the kids. And I don't understand why the kids have to suffer because the parents are being over-nationalistic. I don't want to open up a can of worms there either. I don't want to say that all Chinese are over-nationalistic. It was just their preference. They wanted a Chinese person to teach their kids wushu, right? Fine. But if the kids were enjoying it, the kids were having a great time, and they were doing a great job. And I know they would have been doing good in tournaments, right?
Right.
But at the time, there were no other wushu schools that would have taught them that. So then what? They're going to pull their kid out, make their kids cry, which they did because they managed to find me like 2 years later and say that they were heartbroken. But nothing could have convinced their parents to let them learn under me. And I was like, wow, didn't want to learn from a round eye or a different Asian, I guess, you know.
Yeah, you're far from round eye. Sorry.
Well, I've got rounder eyes than most Filipinos, so I guess I am considered a round eye in my own culture.
And a while ago, you told me even in your own school, you could not get a lot of students because of your national background.
Yeah, yeah. I couldn't get a lot of a lot of Asian people for wushu because I was not Chinese. Didn't matter that, you know, I spent years competing with wushu and stuff like that and was made, you know, a coach by Master Hong. It didn't matter. They wanted a Chinese person, and that's fine. And in cases like that, I say, fine, you know. And I have no animosity toward those people. I will send them over to my wushu sister, Li Tianyuan, because she's an amazing, amazing, amazing wushu coach in her own right, who is Chinese. So I send them there. The people that I do have are Malaysian, Vietnamese, Filipino, and Caucasian. And they're doing great wushu. So there. For all the haters out there.
That was very mature.
I know, right? Right. But again, that can actually be part of our talk for protocol. Well, oh my goodness, Bob, we are almost out of time.
We should talk about our next couple shows. Next week,
yes,
we will have Elastic Steel.
Mm-hmm.
That's a personal trainer that will come on. And we've got Lori Kadamian, wife of Master Chris Kadamian, which is a nutritionalist. And
mm-hmm.
she will be talking about proper nutrition. And then the following week, we will have Kent Turnipseed and Alan Argusa, which are NRA shooting instructors. And they have a book out called Martial Art of the Gun, and they actually call it Gun Fu. So that'll be
That's
a great
awesome.
Show. And in March, or not March, I'm sorry, I'm losing myself here. In
mm-hmm.
August, the third week of August, we're going to have Jeet Kune Do instructor under the Temujin Lukai system, Mark Stewart, on the show.
Very cool. It's going to be a great few shows along with the proper protocol show. We can't forget that. Tune in next week as we have Elastic Steel and Lisa Kadamian. And for those of you that haven't checked out Elastic Steel's videos, go to Dynamic Dojo Facebook page right there on Facebook. Just kind of scroll and look for Elastic Steel's videos. Paul's videos are very informative, and we look forward on having nutrition, fitness training, and science. Stretching methods based on, you know, scientific and kinesiology methods. We're looking
forward
to having
And we are having our show on next week. We're having it on again at 11 o'clock to 1.
Mm-hmm. Yep, 11
instead
to 1.
Of the typical 6 o'clock.
Yeah. Yeah, so we'll have our usual date at the usual 11 o'clock time there for
right.
brunch. Awesome. Well, thanks for a fun time there, Bob. That was cool.
Oh, it was a blast.
It was, and special thanks to Sifu Charles Shepherd for joining us for our first half, and special thank you to Mr. Carl Hinkson, who had put in his 2 cents about why black belts in Japan at one time did have to be registered. So, pretty fun stuff. So join us next week for nutrition and stretching methods. So we'll see everyone next week. Bye, everybody.
Bye-bye.
Bye.